Hello, welcome to the Marvin Bird Show. I am your host, Dr. Marvin Bird, offering a unique perspective on education. Well, it's been a while, so let's jump right into this. The topic of today's show is three lessons every parent should teach their child. Three lessons every parent should teach their child. And before I get into the meat of this, let me take a step back and offer you once again, my audience, my definition of a school district, because I think this is it's very important that we truly understand what a school district is. And only when we understand what a school district is can we really make the necessary adjustments in order to make it better, in order to improve student achievement. So here is what a school district is. A school district consists of various groups of people working together in order to ensure student success. And there are five groups of people. There are students, there are parents, there are teachers, there are administrators, and there are stakeholders. And the perfect visual is that of a rowing team in the Olympics. They're in the boat. Everyone's doing the same thing at the same time, using the same power, and they're going in the same direction. That is what a successful school district looks like. And in a rowing team, the athletes will tell you that it's very difficult to make up for what someone else is not doing. And so it is with a successful school district. Everyone has got to do their part in order for the ultimate goal to be achieved. And so that's why we've come full circle. And today's topic is three lessons every parent should teach their child. The great philosopher John Locke, who was also influential in the creation of the United States government, he once said that children entered the world tabula rasa, or in other words, that means blank paper or blank slate. And his argument was that as people grew over time, they acquired information and they developed based on that information, that their inclinations, their characteristics, all those things developed as time went by. But it's those early experiences that really shaped that long-term development. So as we go on, I'm going to talk about a metaphorical blank slate that your children have, because as time goes on, there's going to be information imparted on that blank slate. And so as we go on, I'm going to talk about a metaphorical blank slate that your children have, and they're going to use that information that's on that blank slate in order to make decisions, in order to shape their development. So let's take this for example. Imagine your response if your child said the really bad word, said the F word. And your response would naturally be, well, wait a second, who taught you that? Where'd you learn that? You see, when we ask that question, we're asking who wrote that word on your slate. That's why we're so careful when it comes to friends, when it comes to strangers. We don't want you speaking to strangers. When it comes to choosing a school or when it comes to choosing a caregiver for our kids, we're very careful when it comes to those things, because all these people have a certain level of influence. All these people, we allow them to have access to, once again, that metaphorical slate that our children have. And as parents, it's our job to control as best we can what's written on that slate. You see, what this comes down to is education. It's education. I can remember growing up in the 90s, and I remember when they first started the DARE program, it was a big deal, and I had not come in contact with drugs prior to this program. And so the idea of the program was to get this positive message, write this positive message on my slate before I ever had the opportunity to come into contact with drugs. And so that's the way the slate works. You want positive things written on that blank slate. And so ultimately, that's the idea of the blank slate, to put the positive information on that slate, to empower children with information so that they can make the right decision. And so follow me with this. I believe that it's information. And again, we write information on that metaphorical blank slate of our children. It's information that helps to shape their vision. Now, vision is, it's a picture of success. It's a picture of something that hasn't happened. And it's a picture of something that could be far off into the future, such as going to college. But when we are careful about what's written on that slate, here's what happens. Here's what happens. Children are able to hide that vision, keep it close to their heart, and chase after it each and every day. For example, I love the story of the Wright brothers. The Wright brothers in 1878, I believe it was, they were given a toy helicopter by their father. And since then, they were fascinated with the idea of a machine that could fly. And for the longest time, they wanted to build something that flew. But something like that costs money in order to build a prototype, in order to even learn about the different machinery, in order to build something that could fly. And so they needed money. And it took time to raise the money to do the things that they wanted to do. But they never lost sight of the vision. They never lost sight of the vision. And so years later, decades would pass by until they were able to see their vision enter into reality. And I think that as parents, when we're careful, when we do a fantastic job of writing on our children's metaphorical slate, then they've got enough information to formulate a vision of their future, and then they feel confident enough each and every day to chase that vision. Even when they're out of our sight, meaning when they're at school, they're doing the things that they need to do to ultimately chase that vision of success that's far in the future. And actually, it's from birth. No, even in the womb, we have the opportunity to start writing on that slate. And that's a parent's job to do that. Our twins, Gavin and Gianna, they're going to learn a lot of things from us before they enter into school. We are going to teach them very early. Actually, we're already teaching them how to treat people, how to be a good steward of the things that God gives us. And they're only 14 months. But again, as a parent, it's your job to, you are always teaching. They told us that because we had twins, it's going to be great because they'll have each other to play with. Well, you know what? Sometimes they don't play a lot. They fight. Like they are hitting. They get upset when one person has a toy that they want to play with. And so, man, I'm thinking, wow, I'm okay. It's a little free play. So you guys just play amongst yourselves. I'm going to watch the football game. And so it doesn't always work out that way because you're always having to teach. So I have to turn off the TV. I have to teach them. No, this is how we do it. We take turns. We're kind. We don't hit. That's what we do. We're parents. And so the research is clear regarding cognitive development in utero, going back to the womb I spoke of earlier. I can remember when we bought the speaker when my wife was pregnant to play classical music for our babies because we learned that, you know, stimulation is good for babies in utero. And there was also a study that I came across, and I'll post this on our Facebook page /MarvinBird.edu. And the study talked about how babies were able to hear, or they were able to react to the mother's voice after having been born, because they heard it in utero, and they were also able to react to the mother reading a book that they had heard before because they recognized the cadence and rhythm of the mother's voice. And so, ladies and gentlemen, the womb is the first classroom. The womb is the first classroom. And yes, right now you've got a lot of politicians that they're running around talking about pre-K education, which is positive. It's really good. But no, the womb is the first classroom, and it is imperative. It's imperative that we do our part here as parents. So once they exit the womb, they enter into another classroom. And this classroom is from birth until they're able to go to pre-K or kindergarten. And so you are the teacher. As a parent, you are the teacher, and they're going to learn vital lessons that are going to assist them in the attainment of future knowledge. Again, this is very important. These vital lessons assist them in attaining future knowledge. Future knowledge. And it's, let's use Morse code as an example. Morse code is it's a language using a series of dots and dashes. And so in order to understand a Morse code message, you have to have written down somewhere the actual key in order to understand what this Morse code message is trying to tell you. For example, the letter A is a dot and a dash. The number 1 is a dot and followed by 4 dashes. The letter L is dot, dash, dot, dot. That's a letter L. The letter O is dash, dash, dash. And the letter S is 3 dots. So in order to understand, in order to acquire knowledge that's in Morse code, you have to have that key written down somewhere. And that's the way I would describe it for a parent trying to figure out what things they need to teach their children before they send them off to school. That's why it's so important. It's so important to equip them with the necessary information, lessons, so that they can transition to a formal classroom setting. So again, as a parent, you're always teaching, And the question that you need to ask yourself is, what will be written on the tablet of your child before you send them to school? It's very, very important. So before I get to the 3 lessons every parent should teach their child before they start school, I want to tell you about The Journey. The Journey is a blog on my website. And the blog posts are 300 words or less. They're written to students and they're for students. And the overall goal is to help students increase their soft skills. And the wonderful thing is that with these blog posts, there are teacher lesson plans. And these lesson plans are one individual page. You see, I've cut out all of the fluff. The teacher prep time is minimal. Aren't you sick and tired of those programs that have all these moving parts? And many of those parts are superfluous. Well, with this program, I've cut out the fluff. And what I'd like to do is I would like to partner with you for the 2016-2017 school year to help increase the soft skills of your students. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to post, if you go to our Facebook page, check it out. I've posted a couple of sample lesson plans that go along with some of the blog posts. So just go to our Facebook page. It's Facebook.com/MarvinBird.edu. Go to the Facebook page, download those lesson plans, check out the blog posts, and you'll see that this is very, very simple. And what I can do with this is I can ensure fidelity because it is very difficult to stray away from a plan that is just so simple. Again, my website is called MarvinBird.com. On the homepage, you'll see it right in the middle. It'll say The Journey. That blog, again, written to students, for students, help them build their soft skills. So, number 1, before parents send their children off to school, they should teach them how to love. How to love. You know, love is, it's a basic need. It's part of the circle of life. And it is so, so very unfortunate. I've been working with students for about 12 years now. It's very unfortunate when I see young girls with just a terrible misunderstanding of what love is. And so parents, please, 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 please teach your children about love. Teach them how to love. Love is a passionate affection for someone. It's a passionate affection for someone, but there are also different kinds of love. This is how we understand the difference between appropriate and inappropriate when it comes to relationships with other people. So I'm going to go through the 4 types of love. Number one is the agape kind of love, agape love. Agape is an unconditional love for everyone. And this kind of love is closely associated with Christianity and the teachings of Jesus Christ. This agape love delights in helping everyone. And encompassed in agape love is the belief that everyone has worth. So just imagine how wonderful things would be if our schools were filled with students who held this belief, who practices that everybody has worth. The people who I'm riding the bus with, the people who are sitting in my class, people everyone on the playground, we all have worth. Imagine those interactions if everybody believed this, that everyone here has worth. Oh my goodness, it would be amazing, I'm sure. So the second kind of love is phileo. Now, phileo is a platonic kind of love between friends, and phileo is where Philadelphia gets its name, the city of brotherly love, phileo. Also, number three, storge. Storge is it's a love shared between parents and their children. And for the fourth kind of love, let's cue up the Barry White music because it's the quiet storm. The fourth kind of love is the eros love. And that's where we get the word erotic. And of course, eros is associated with romance and obviously the act of sex. Okay. And so as you can see, I'm having way too much fun with this. But as you can see that there is a for love, there's a scale, there's a spectrum depending on the relationship. Love is different. Depending on the relationship, love is different. And so this is important to understand. And yes, this is happening with teens. Absolutely, it is. When we have people practicing eros without the agape. You get that? Practicing eros, practicing, going through the motions of an eros kind of love without the agape, that's going to get someone hurt. That is going to get someone hurt. And I'm going to teach that to both my children. And so it's my job as Gianna's father to teach her that when she turns about 35, if she meets a guy, she's got to be able to spot that agape love. Before you do anything else, she's got to be able to spot what that agape love looks like in a person. And she would have learned that from me. And with my son Gavin, I'm going to teach him that it is very, very harmful to try to engage in eros without agape. And so this is a very important lesson. I have seen it numerous times where teenagers, they find their identity in relationships that are very, very shallow. They're not rooted in anything. So parents, it's your love that adds meaning and relevance to life, and it encourages them to explore the world. And so it's natural when students go to a school, they want to try to belong to something, but it's your love that helps them to discern what they should belong to and what they should distance themselves from. Here's an example. Johnny is a freshman. And he's just starting high school. But, you know, Johnny is a little concerned. There's about 2,600 students in his high school. He's barely remembered his schedule, so he's a little nervous. This is a new district for him as well. So he's just moving in. And, you know, for his age, he's pretty short. And he's not dressed like everyone else. You know, his family is doing the best they can. They're getting by. All children in Johnny's family are clothed and everything, but he doesn't have the Jordans like everybody else has. And so he sticks out just a little bit he sticks out. And so as the school year goes along during the first semester, he decides that, you know what, I've got to make some friends. I've got to find a small little group to hang with so I can have something else to look forward to when I come to school each and every day. And so he observes these guys in his gym class. They seem to be pretty cool, and it seems like everybody knows their name. And he decides, man, it'd be cool to kind of know these guys, hang out with these guys, and have them as friends. But unfortunately, because of his family's financial situation, you know, he doesn't have a phone. And it was plainly obvious when his math teacher asked all the students to pull out their phones and scan some document. So Johnny's nervous to approach these guys. But luckily, he didn't have to approach them because Johnny was a pretty good basketball player and he had a really good game during gym. And these cool people, they noticed. And so in the locker room, they went up to Johnny and they introduced themselves and they had a really, really good conversation. And Johnny was happy. He was thinking, oh my gosh, this is great. This is great. These guys are cool people. I finally found some friends. This is awesome. But one of the cool people proceeds to ask Johnny, says, hey, Johnny, we're going to go and we're going to skip fifth hour and we're going to go smoke some weed. You want to come with us? And so for Johnny, just for 5 seconds, the earth stood still as these cool people were waiting for his response. And although Johnny was very happy about finally being able to talk to these guys and the possibility of being friends with these guys, after those 5 seconds were up, this is what Johnny said. Johnny said, you know what? When I was in my mother's womb, my parents talked to me. They told me that they loved me. They taught me about who I was and my family. They also instilled in me a vision of the future. They told me that I had so much potential and I was going to be successful if and only if I followed the appropriate steps. If I followed their teaching, if I did what they instructed me to do, then I would find success. They also taught me that I have value and that my life matters. And so do my decisions. And so, no, I will not skip class to go smoke weed with you. As a matter of fact, this will be the last time we conversate because I don't want to go down the path that you're going down. I actually hope that you change your mind about what you're thinking about doing. Have a good day. That's what Johnny said because he was taught what love is and how to love people. There's a quote that I came across. It says, those who have a strong sense of love have the courage to be imperfect. That's by Brené Brown. We need to teach our children that it's okay to be imperfect. It's hard being a teen. People don't want to be a social outcast. But if people are trying to lead our children down the wrong path, we need to show them that, hey, these people, they don't have love for you. They don't love you. They don't have an unconditional love for you. Their intentions are wrong. So you shouldn't follow them. Okay, so that's the first lesson every parent should teach their child before they start schools. Love, how to love. The second lesson every parent should teach their child before their child starts school. You ready for this? It's going to be a difficult one, but discipline. Discipline, discipline, discipline. You have to teach it. You have to teach it. You have to have discipline. The lack of discipline can derail everything. Can derail everything, every positive thing a school is trying to do. So my definition of discipline is doing what is expected at the right time, the right place. Doing what is expected, the right time, at the right place. For example, just this past November, I was watching, I love James Bond. I love James Bond. So I was in the theater, I'm watching Bond. He's taking care of these bad guys, taking them out. And there's this guy sitting next to me, and I swear every 30 seconds his phone is going off. He's texting, and you know, after about 5 minutes of this, I lean over and I ask him if he would kindly stop doing that, because it was, the phone wasn't on vibrate or anything. He had the ringer on. And so, you know, I'm watching Bond and I'm listening to this guy's ringer. And so I get a little frustrated because, again, you know, that shows a lack of discipline, doing what is expected at the right time, at the right place. Because at this particular theater, they had a no tolerance policy. And so this guy was just going on and on, breaking the rules. Here's another place, the passing lane. Okay. If you're out on a, you know, in the Sunday drive kind of mood in the passing lane, and you can look in your rear view mirror and you can read my mind, that means you need to move over. Okay, yes, I have flaws, everyone. Yes, and you know, some of you are agreeing with me. Some of you are giving me an amen. And the rest of you are saying, that was you behind me. So here's another place. We're talking about discipline. The checkout line. Okay. If you're in the checkout line, okay. If you're in the fast lane, okay. That thing says 10 items or less, not 11, not 15, not 20. Come on, help us out here. We're talking about discipline, doing what is expected at the right time, at the right place. So in a nutshell, when it comes to discipline, there is acceptable and there is unacceptable behavior according to the time and place and the rules and expectations that have been conveyed. And parents, let me tell you this. Schools are struggling with this. They're struggling with this because the numbers are so significant. You see, back in the day, it didn't take as much in order to secure compliance from the student body. You know, most of the student body would abide by the rules and expectations. You know, old school was, you know, if you know, a parent heard about something from the teacher, then they get it from the teacher, and then when they got home, then they get it from the parent. And so you had that fear. And in a lot of instances in the past, many students would have been forced out or forced into the job field or just basically forced out because of attendance issues. And just this past summer, we had the whole rethink discipline movement, and it's still moving along. And so there's a growing number of people who want different things to take place instead of suspension, because obviously it's impossible to replicate what goes on in the classroom for students who have been suspended. And so we'll follow this whole movement, but it's important for you to know this, parents. Schools are struggling with the numbers. So here's just a couple of things. And, you know, from birth, what we do as parents is we set a routine. We sleep at night and we're awake during the day. You know, you have to tell children that. They don't know that unless we tell them. And with a routine, they know what to expect throughout different periods of the day. And then with a routine, it becomes easier to convey expectations because it's similar. And once we write it upon that metaphorical tablet, it becomes like the lyrics to a song. It's very rhythmic. It's very rhythmic. Like, this is what we do. These are the expectations. And it's just as a nice rhythmic bounce to it once we have a routine. The opposite of routine is just chaos. It's just, we don't know what we're doing, whatever. We're going to do whatever. So that's the number one thing. You got to have the routine. And for us with Gavin and Gianna, that's the best thing that we did, is that at 6 weeks, we got them out of our bedroom. We put them in their own room, in their own beds, and they learn how to fall asleep on their own in their own beds. And so, you know, from then on, the rhythm kind of started to set in place because we did the same thing each and every day. And so we didn't have to go through this whole reteaching of the expectations because we were consistent. The schedule, the routine schedule, allows for consistency. And so it's easier for children to hit the mark if they know. And so it's easier for them to hit the mark because they know what they have to do. Oh, it's 5 o'clock. It's time for me to do my homework. And parents, let me give you this too. From 3 to 7, that's prime time. That's prime time. When school is out 3 to 7, that is prime time for students to take care of business. And I know that, you know, some students are, they're active in sports or whatnot, but the hours of 3 to 7 or for athletes, it's different, but there's a certain block of time that I call prime time for taking care of business. You need to know what they're doing during that time. You need to know what they're doing during that time. And also with that routine, parents, there has to be non-negotiables. And I'd say that prime time is non-negotiable. There has to be time to take care of homework and study. Complete homework and study. Those are two different things. So it has to be non-negotiables. There has to be things that this is what I mean. This is what we're going to do each and every day. And there's just no back and forth about it. Because when you allow room for a fight, you allow room for a back and forth, then settling is bound to happen, because eventually we call this badgering. You know, eventually they're able to wear us down, because this is every day. It's the same thing. They ask, I don't want to go to bed at 7. Let me stay up another 30 minutes. No, you're going to bed at 7. No, I want to go to bed at 8. So, once you get that every night, then eventually you're bound to settle. Okay. So, going back to how important discipline is in terms of school, you can't assimilate to the values, cultures, and rules of an organization without discipline. And let me define that word assimilate, because that word assimilate has been associated with a lot of negativity in the history of this country. But assimilate means to cause something to resemble. So let's take, for example, the mission statement of a Fortune 500 company. A CEO cannot compel everyone within that company to chase after that mission and vision statement without discipline. If the people who are a part of this company, if they believe that I don't care what the mission and vision statement is, I'm going to do what I want to do. Well, if that virus infects other people, because other people are going to pay attention. Hey, this guy, he can do whatever he wants to do. I'm not going to bust my butt to chase after this mission and vision statement. Well, now you're going to have chaos, because you have a bunch of people doing their own thing. Well, the mission and vision statement of a company, a Fortune 500 company, everybody who's part of the company has to be following that mission and vision statement in order for it to become a reality. And so if people aren't resembling that mission and vision statement, then the company is not going to be successful. And so schools have mission and vision statements as well. And everyone who's a part of the school district needs to assimilate or needs to resemble that mission and vision statement in order for the school to be successful. But it cannot happen without discipline. You have to have discipline. The worst thing we ever did with referrals, I believe, is count them. That's the worst thing we ever did with referrals is count them, because the inclination is to lower the number. They're seen as all negative. Instead of teachable moments, they're seen as punitive instead of growth opportunities. Because it shouldn't take multiple referrals for the same person over the same thing. And so now we have third parties who are looking at the data and they're shaping opinions. And so I worry about compromise when it comes to discipline. Compromise and discipline leads to compromise in all standards. That includes academics. If we compromise with discipline, that's going to lead to compromise in all of the standards that we set. And so you can throw the mission and vision statement out the window when we compromise on discipline. John C. Maxwell once said, most people want to avoid pain, and discipline is usually painful. That is so true, but you have to have discipline. Think back to what I said about the mission and vision statement of a corporation. You have to have discipline. So parents, the consistent teaching of discipline is going to go a long way in order to help your child chase their vision. You know, one of the big things for preventing future behavior issues is to reteach expectations. So you say that a lot in education, reteach expectations, because obviously it's why everyone knows that no one is perfect, right? No one is perfect. But let's think about this. There was a restaurant worker, right? Who handles food. He handles food and he had a hard time washing his hands. And so after a couple weeks, was noticed by the chef slash owner that, hey, you know, people aren't washing, this guy's not washing his hands. And so what he does is he posts a sign in the restroom that says, all employees must wash their hands. You've seen those signs. I hope they don't need these reminders. But anyways, so the owner slash chef, he posts a sign, all employees, they must wash their hands before going back to work. And so another 2 weeks passes by and he notices, gosh darn it, this guy still isn't washing his hands. And so finally he decides, okay, got to have a talk with this guy. And so he says, hey, I noticed you weren't washing your hands. You know, we need to make sure that everyone is safe and, you know, following the safety guidelines and whatnot. So I need you to wash your hands. And so it was kind of a passing conversation. It wasn't anything too confrontational. And so the worker just kind of nodded. He had one of his earbuds in his ear at the time. And so it was a very casual conversation. He nodded. And so that was the end of that. And so about another couple of months go by and the chef recognizes that, you know, maybe this guy washes his hands after he uses the restroom, and then sometimes he does. More times than not, he just leaves without washing his hands, but sometimes he is. So the owner notices this, but also the other workers start to notice this. And so they become a little sloppy. During a rush, they decide, you know what, this guy didn't wash his hands, so I'm going to hurry up and rush back to my station so I can get my work done. So now this owner has a much larger problem on his hands, because not only is it this one worker not washing his hands, but now other workers are not being safe when they handle the food. And what makes the situation even tougher is the fact that this worker is his brother-in-law, and his sister just delivered a baby girl. And this owner knows that if he fires his brother-in-law, and it's not going to look very good on him during Thanksgiving dinner. So this is a tough situation here, isn't it? But if this worker is allowed to stay on along with his unsafe practices, it could harm the entire restaurant by possibly getting a customer sick. So what's this restaurant owner supposed to do? Ladies and gentlemen, I think this is the kind of situation some school districts around the country are dealing with. They don't want to turn away anybody. They really don't. They truly believe that we can educate everyone. But consistent discipline issues make teaching difficult. It just does. And learning is difficult in that environment as well. So the last lesson that every parent should teach their children before they start school is very simple and short. You need to teach your children the fundamentals of reading. You need to be able to get off to a nice head start as it relates to reading. Once you write those fundamentals on that metaphorical blank slate, it's going to be easier for them to acquire more knowledge in the future. The ability to communicate can open doors. Conversely, the inability to communicate closes doors of opportunity. And this is largely affecting our students in poverty. From the NAEP, 21% of students living in poverty are proficient in reading. 52% of their non-poor peers. Now, both of those numbers, they're unacceptable. That is true. Illiteracy traps families in poverty. And that's one of the reasons that I became a teacher, is because I wanted to break that cycle of poverty by helping children gain that education and chase that vision. So, you know, when it comes to reading, there's a number of programs. All you need to do is just contact your school district, contact the library. They can put you in touch with resources. And what it comes down to, and for this month, actually, what I've been doing is I've been fasting, not food, but TV. And I'll tell you what I found during this time is I have noticed that our children, I've noticed that our children are picking up books more. And I realize that our values are their values. You know, we teach them when they aren't teaching. You know, my both of them, Gavin and Gianna, they'll take anything and put it up to their ear like it's a phone, you know, because that's what they see. And so now, because of this fast of TV, you know, I'm reading more. I'm reading more. I'm studying. I'm preparing for podcasts. And so they see me doing that. And so they're constantly bringing up books to us because they want us to read to them. And so we've just, bottom line, we've got to, and I'm going to do this, you know, and even past this month, past this fast, I'm going to continue to cut down the amount of TV I watch. We've got to turn off the TV and read to our kids. We've got to do that. We've got to do that. They pick up on that. They really, really do. I can testify to that. And it's just been so amazing. I love it. I love it that they have their nose in books. They're flipping through the pages. They don't know what they're doing, but they realize that, hey, this must be important. And so parents, you've got to do that for your children. You've got to do that for them. Well, there you have it. Another Marvin Bird Show. Thank you so much for listening. Please remember to check our Facebook page, Marvin Bird EDU, for articles and the other things that I've referenced during this show. And I want to encourage you as you move forward, as you're working with students, keep up the good work. And just remember, no matter how difficult it may seem, no matter how many obstacles may be in your way, just remember, when it comes to our students, nothing is impossible. It can be done. Take care.